Thanks for coming, folks. I'm Matt London. I work in the Health and Safety Department of the New York State Public Employees Federation, and I'm also part of a research team out of the University of Maryland School of Nursing. And be presenting sort of the first phase, really, of a five-year NIOSH-funded project that I'm working on, and these are some of the co-investigators. Just as a little background or context for, you know, the work that we're doing, as some of you are probably aware, New York State has a comprehensive workplace violence prevention law that has been in effect for 2 years now, and it covers all public sector employers other than K through 12 schools. And, you know, those bullets there, you know, briefly outline some of the key points of it. You know, this talk's not really going to be about that law, but that's the context in which this work has been occurring. And as mentioned in the prior slide, the law requires employers to consider all aspects of workplace violence, regardless of who the perpetrator is. And this study is focusing on type three, which is coworker, and we're defining coworker broadly to mean any fellow employee, regardless of where that employee is in the hierarchy relative to you. As I mentioned, it's a five-year NIOSH-funded project. It's being done in an unnamed Northeast state among the state government workforce. It's using participatory action research methods, and a key component of that is that really, you know, frankly, from the conceptualization of the project, you know, as the proposal itself was being written, we convened a project advisory group with some of the key stakeholders. These are the research aims, and what we'll be talking about today is really a questionnaire study, which you know, has taken up more time than we expected, but frankly been more successful, I think, than we hoped for as well, and really covers the first three research aims. So this unnamed Northeast state, sizable, has many different agencies, and in terms of figuring out where we were going to do this project and the survey, we were really looking for agencies that individually had an interest in workplace violence, were already working with their labor union representatives on some aspects of workplace violence, and then collectively we wanted the agencies that we selected to be representative of the major functions of state government. The survey, you know, we were hoping to have people complete the survey at work, and, you know, we found out that in the agencies that were participating, virtually everybody had a work email account. What we were able to do was to set the survey up behind the University of Maryland's firewall and give each eligible employee via an email a unique link that would get them past the firewall to the survey. You know, that was part of our attempt to ensure and, frankly, to reassure the workers that the survey would be both anonymous and confidential. We put a lot of energy into trying to get, you know, a high participation rate. And so we worked at each agency that was participating with a local project advisory group that included managers and the union reps, and figured out, you know, some strategies for actually making it easy for people to participate in the survey. You can see there what we did. For those folks that either did not have work email or who really, you know, were concerned that even with our assurances, their confidentiality might be breached, we made paper surveys available. Total of seven agencies or facilities participated. You can see just under 13,000 completed surveys, 72% overall response rate. Yeah, it was a lot of work. You know, it paid off. And this was, you know, correct me, Jane, but I think initially we were projecting doing about 5,000 surveys, and we're talking about doing mailed surveys, and really through extensive work with the overall project advisory group, we came up with the strategy that we ended up employing, and you know, the result was we got almost three times as many surveys as we planned for, and you know, a good response rate.
And some battles.
Say that again?
And a few battles.
Yeah, some psychic scars and other things, but you know. So the survey itself, we asked about all aspects of type 3, the coworker conflict that were experienced over the prior 6 months. What was the nature of it? How frequently did it occur? Who was the perpetrator? And as you'll see in a subsequent slide, you know, we didn't ask them to name names, but we wanted to know where the perpetrator was in the hierarchy relative to them. What was the impact on the individual who experienced these behaviors? And then what actions did the individual take, and what actions were they aware of that were taken by the organization? So the beginning of the questionnaire, and the questionnaire took, on average, about 15 minutes to complete, we were told, five or six pages. And you know, we began with this battery of negative acts questions that was really derived from a somewhat larger battery of questions that was used. It's been used by a lot of the researchers in Europe, which is really where sort of the pioneering work in workplace bullying has gone on. And so you can see that overall, you know, just under half of the folks reported at least one negative act, one of those six negative acts, from a coworker. So, you know, if it was somebody working in a psychiatric hospital, we were very clear, we're not interested in this survey in hearing, you know, what happened from a patient or a family member. We want to know about just coworker. So you can see that, I suspect, all the way to the back of the room. I won't read it, but, you know, some of these negative acts were more frequently reported than others. And for the negative acts, so of those folks, of those 44% of the total who reported negative acts, 28% said it was a top manager. So a little over half really said it was a top manager or supervisor. About half said a peer. You know, one in five said a subordinate. You know, because there were, you know, what we did in the survey for each of those perpetrator categories, they could say yes, no. And also we were asking, you know, for all the negative acts that you experienced in the prior 6 months. So people may have experienced, you know, something from their supervisor, a different thing from a peer. So that's why these sum up to more than 100. We then asked about bullying. And in the survey itself, we defined bullying this way for them to try to take at least a little bit of the subjectivity out. And you can see that 10% overall said yes to any. About 5% said it occurred at least monthly, 2% at least weekly. And, you know, these are some of the leading sort of studies that have been done elsewhere on bullying. So you can really see that, you know, our numbers are, you know, pretty much in line with this. The definitions, usually the definition of bullying itself is pretty similar, but the limits on, you know, how frequently it has to occur before we're going to count it varied by study. But, you know, overall, we're in the same ballpark. We didn't see much of a difference by gender, you know, for both any bullying or for the more frequent bullying. We also didn't see differences by racial or ethnic difference. One thing I should say, what we did, well, a couple things. One, how can you have a 10% overall, you know, prevalence, and then for females and males, it's both under 10%? And the reason is because we included in our 12,966 all surveys where they answered the six negative act questions. But they had the ability to leave other questions later in the survey blank. And what we found for some of the demographic questions that we asked, as many as, you know, 15-20% of the respondents left those blank. And we still included their surveys in the you know, in the analyses. But that's, and what we found was those people that were reporting the negative acts and the bullying were more likely to omit what their race was, what their gender was. The other demographic questions we asked were age by 10-year category. We asked tenure within the organization by broad categories. We also, rather than asking for their specific job title, because we, you know, we were very conscious of trying to get as much information as we could, but without making people feel like they're going to know exactly who I am. You know, I started work in 1987, and my job title is this, and I'm an African-American male, et cetera. So we asked what their bargaining unit was, whether they were in a management confidential position or in one of the three major bargaining units that were there. So, you know, through questions like that, we were able to get a sense of who was reporting what. Okay. So for bullying, you can see that compared to the negative acts questions, a little more likely to be perpetrated by somebody above you in the hierarchy, a little less likely from a coworker. We asked people, you know, what occurred? What'd you do as a result of it? And you can see here that for the bullying, people were more likely to take action. And pretend it never happened doesn't mean that nothing was done. You know, sort of interpreted more as a coping mechanism than a total lack of action being taken. So we asked a set of questions about what, you know, the impact was on you as a, you know, a target of these behaviors. And I think you can figure out monthly bullying, violence, bullying, negative acts. Overall, and I'm not really presenting it, you know, for time reasons, but overall, just under 3% of the 13,000 folks reported having been physically attacked or threatened, directly threatened with physical attack. And, you know, what I find interesting here is that you see bullying, and particularly frequent bullying, really has the greatest impact on individuals, even more than the being a recipient of a violent act. You know, this isn't a surprise to anybody, you know, and we're trying to do some measurement of some of this stuff. It's difficult, and frankly, it would be a, you know, a separate study, I suspect, but significant impact on the organization as well as on individuals. You know, if this were a training instead of a session with three more minutes left, we'd have a robust discussion about what are the causes of these types of behaviors in the workplace. You know, and it's more than just, you know, human nature. You know, people are bullies, you know, whatever. There's probably some aspect of that. But the approach we're taking is that there's absolutely organizational factors that contribute, things that the organization can do to, if not totally prevent, at least reduce the frequency of these types of things. You know, we all know the environment in which we're working, you know, literally, and we're in the early phase of the intervention part of the study now, and it's occurring at a time of threatened layoffs, budget shortfalls, you know, other significant stressors within the workplace. So, you know, it's the joys of doing field work. So, you know, what we're preaching, and here the we morphs both from the research team into sort of the union partners to the project, is that, you know, to prevent this stuff, it's got to be part of an overall workplace violence prevention program. And, you know, as item three says, you know, zero tolerance is something that, you know, might sound good, and a lot of employers like to basically decide, okay, we'll just say we're not going to tolerate any of this, and now we can wash our hands of it, you know, we've taken action. But, you know, unless you've addressed the systemic factors, it really just becomes punitive and ineffective. It doesn't really solve the problem. Reporting is really, really important. People need to know that there's a safe way to report, that something positive is going to come of it, There needs to be a feedback loop closed so that people who report incidents, you know, actually be made aware that something has happened as a result of it. We're trying to focus a lot on the supervision and, you know, certainly what we find in state government, and I suspect that it's not too different in many other sectors. Ability to manage people and interpersonal skills are rarely the top criteria by which supervisors are selected. And so, you know, we're trying to deal with that a little bit. You know, we're not in a position, obviously, to change the system, but maybe provide some training. Here's some websites, our union's website on top. The second one is the Department of Labor in the unnamed state that, you know, that will provide you with a copy of the regulation, and then OSHA and CDC, and I think that's it. So any questions?
We do have time for questions.